Hello, my name is Mary Mack. I'm the Executive Director of ACES, the Association of Certified eDiscovery Specialists, and I want to give you a warm welcome to our ACES webinar channel, where we are hosting a live podcast recording of our talk. It's episode 8. We have our fabulous host, John Tredenick, who is the principal and founder of Tredenick Law, and Tom Gricks, counselor and a managing director of professional services at Catalyst Open Text. And I want to give a shout out to John for his programming bona fides, because he has put together a TARTalk webpage. You can reach it at tartalk.org. And John, why don't you kick us off?
Well, good afternoon, Mary, and it's always great to see you on our virtual porch. It's a beautiful sunny day here in virtual New Hampshire, my summer home. How are you doing today, Tom, and what are you drinking over in that rocking chair?
Hey, John, thanks. I'm doing great today, and today, you know, it's just a little bit of blackjack neat. I need that today just to get through this topic of validation to make sure that I'm just calm enough when I'm talking about validation.
Straight up, no chaser. What can I pour you, Mary?
Well, I think a mint julep, because I'm still wearing the flower pot on my head from the Derby, and I think that would be just perfect.
That's great. And I'm having the all-natural, sort of sweet, straight-up tea with a kicker. I think it's a new version of Snapple. They just gave it a new name, But we're excited, and we're going to hit validation today, but let me also welcome everyone to tartalk.org. That's a website where you can see all our episodes and a view from our front porch, and we'll have all kinds of fun things up there as we go forward. So that's tartalk.org. So the question we were talking about ourselves at Sedona was, why the heck do we have to validate these TAR results? Most of you have been around as long as us, well, there aren't many, know that when we did discovery before, we produced those documents and there was no validation, either talked about or frankly thought about. This is what you get, and if you want something else, well, ask us for it or go to the court. But we just grabbed things, got them from the client, what have you, and there was no attempt to validate. Then we came to this world of TAR. After many years with keyword search, and suddenly the validation issue became a big and complex issue. So we thought we'd hit a little bit on why we validate, what it's about, and how we validate TAR results. So, not to use a 50-cent word, but validate, what the heck does that mean? Well, in simple terms, it's just the act of confirming that a process, in this case TAR, has achieved its intended purpose. We're borrowing from the scientists, not just the information retrieval ones, but really all of science is about validation. It's important to TAR for a couple reasons, but including the need to ensure that our TAR algorithm, admittedly a bit of a black box, has worked properly. But there's also some kind of 26G issue that Mr. Tom Gricks is always harping on. What's that all about, Tom?
John, you know, so when I did Global Aerospace, the one thing that worried me the most is that everybody's theory was going to be, I'm going to be able to just throw all this stuff into my TAR tool, look at about 5 documents, press the button, and voila, everything goes over and I'm done. No, under 26G, you are required to make a reasonable inquiry to determine that you are complying with the rules. And in this case, the rules are you got to turn over responsive documents, right? Doesn't have to be perfect, but you got to make sure you've done a reasonable inquiry to know that you've done a good enough job of finding responsive documents and turning them over. And that's why it's important to focus on 26G, and that's why you have to validate. You have to be able to know what you're signing when you sign that 26G certificate.
So the thing to know for our listeners is that every validation process really involves some form of sampling. This is where we get the statisticians and the pointy heads coming in. But sampling is what is required for validation. There are two kinds of samples. One, they call a judgmental sample. That's when you maybe run keyword searches in the discard population in the documents you're not looking at to see if you can find any more relevant documents. The other kind is a statistical sample, and this requires that the sample be drawn randomly from the entire document population. And the key benefit of doing this and doing it properly is that it provides a defensible basis to extrapolate your sample results to a larger document population. So it gets back to the goal of TAR, which is to reduce the number of documents necessary to review. If I have 1 million documents and I want to tell the court or the other side that I've reviewed 50,000 of them and not 1 million, what's the price that I pay for that? I think the answer is validation, proving that you weren't just leaving a lot of responsive, relevant documents on the table.
By the way, John, two things in response to that. One is, I was doing some research the other day to prepare about talking about validation, and what I found was really interesting. This goes all the way back to Mark Twain. I think the original quote, and it's been changed over time, but I think it was lies, damn lies, and validation statistics. I think that's what it originally was. I could be wrong about that. I may have misread it. But anyway, you know, the issue is that we have to make sure that we're using a representative sample to get through this stuff, to make sure that we're moving in the right direction. You know, one of the best examples today of why you can't do this is the In Re Domestic Airline Travel Antitrust litigation. Look, that was a 12 million document set. There's no way that you're ever going to review all of those documents. So you absolutely have to look at samples. And for that sample to be representative, it has to be random. That's the key to true validation, random sample, because we're never going to be able to look at all the documents, just like you said.
All right, we set the stage about validation and why we do it. I'm going to go back on the history, because I heard a rumor, Tom, that you had some involvement in the second case to do TAR. This was back in the 50s or 60s, I think, wasn't it? How did you guys handle all this validation jazz back in those the crib and diaper days of TAR?
Well, you know, when you're using an abacus, it actually does get a little bit difficult. You have to be very, very careful. But, you know, it's interesting because I can remember when I sat down and actually started looking at how I wanted to do validation in global aerospace. There's actually too many stories to actually tell you about the statistics. But one of them was Gordon Cormack said to me, "Oh, my God, you're going to have to review so many documents." Well, he was looking at doing a different type of validation we're going to talk about in a minute. But what I did in global, which really is you know, one of the ways that you can validate is something called the ratio method. And all that really means is you got to take a couple of samples and do a mathematical calculation to figure out what your recall is. So for the ratio method, fairly straightforward. You've got to estimate, it's typically in a TAR 1 scenario, which is what I did in global. You have to estimate the number of responsive documents in your production set because you haven't looked at them all, right? So you do a sample of that. And then you've got to do something to figure out how many total documents there were. Either you do a sample of the entire collection before you start, or you do a sample of the null set, oftentimes called an illusion sample, when you're done. At the end of the day, you actually just do the ratio of what you found and what your sample says you found versus what your sample says would have been the total population. That's how you do recall. Problem with that, small problem, is, you know, it gives you a good point estimate, easy to calculate. Error bounds are a little more fuzzy in terms of how you manage them properly with statistics. So ratio method, a little bit fuzzy on the error bounds.
So I wrote about this in our Catalyst blog. And one of the points made is that if you're sampling what you've left behind, there's always a margin of error. And if you've taken a sample of what you have produced, there might be a margin of error there too. And so the ratio could have two margins of error. And if you go to the extremes, you might think you found 80% of the documents, but at the margins of error, it might be 40%. That might not be enough. At least a lot of people think that. So one of the the statistician stepped in and said, there's a simple method to do this. It just has a problem in it. That simple method is called the direct method. And it's this simple. You take the entire population of documents, not just the ones you've reviewed and produced or the ones you've reviewed and marked as not relevant, but all of those plus the ones you didn't look at, and you draw randomly from that entire sample until you have at least 354 relevant documents if you're going for a low sample, 95% confidence, but it could be more. But you find that many relevant, and then you simply add up the number that were produced versus the number that weren't. The number that were produced is your numerator, and the total is your denominator. If I find 10 that I produced and 50 that I didn't, that's 10 of 60, means my recall was very low. But the direct method was statistically accurate. The problem was we deal in what we call low richness collections, meaning there aren't many relevant documents in the entire population. So if I have a sampling method that means I've got to find, let's say, 384 or 54 documents that are relevant, and there's only one in 100 relevant, I might have to look at 38,000 documents to find 384. And if the richness is even lower, and we've both seen it, you could have to look at hundreds of thousands of documents. So as we wrote in our blog and in TAR for Smart People, that method, while bulletproof statistically, didn't prove to be workable. And so the whole history of TAR has been looking for different validation methods. What say you? What's been happening recently, Tom?
Well, at Catalyst for a long time, we've done a sample that actually uses the illusion analysis, but because we're using a continuous active learning tool, and because a lot of the approach these days is trying to look at continuous active learning, where you actually know what you found, you know what you coded as responsive. You know, we've historically said, okay, it's easy. You just take one sample, look at what you missed, the illusion sample. Run the illusion sample, you know what you missed, you know what you found because you coded it. But and so you can easily do the calculation as the number you found on the numerator divided by the number you found plus what you missed on the denominator, and that gives you the number. We've always done that. You know, it generally accepts the fact that lawyers are doing this review and making the decisions. There is a trend in some of these cases to move away from that and put a little less reliance on the decisions that are made by the reviewers and to actually test those, as you know, John. And maybe you want to just kind of walk through how that process works when you're kind of saying, I want to test the reviewers as well.
Yeah. And for starters, and to hit it again, imagine we have 100,000 documents and we reviewed 10,000. And 5,000 we produced and 5,000 we marked not relevant. When you are testing what's left behind, you always assume that the 5,000 produced were correctly relevant. And most importantly, the 5,000 not produced were correctly categorized. Well, it turns out that anytime you study reviewers' work, you find that they aren't always in tip-top form and they aren't always right. And frankly, there can be a lot of both disagreement and interpretation. And so suddenly these statistical numbers become less and less reliable. So at least some have started suggesting that you've got to test all what turns out to be three categories of documents. The 5,000 I produced, are those really relevant? How do we find out? Well, we take a sample by somebody blindly looking at them without knowing how they've been marked before. Have the 5,000 we didn't produce proved to be not relevant? Same thing, a blind test, and you don't know that they've been marked, so you're not biased. And then you sample what's not looked at, maybe a bigger sample there, but again, a blind test by that same individual. You mix them all together and you sample them, and now you have, I think, what sounds like the ratio method, but it's got an added element, and that is testing of all the decisions made.
The other thing that you get in that, John, clearly is typically when they're looking to do this, and I think it is really because it's the ratio method, is most folks are looking at typically more documents than historically we would have looked at to do the ratio method, certainly more than I did in global aerospace. But, you know, one of the points that I do want to make is that there is one issue that you need to be aware of when you use this type of an approach, and that is there will be reviewer disagreement. We know that a single reviewer will disagree with his or her calls 2 weeks later. So you can never be 100% accurate on all of that. But the most important thing to deal with when you're looking at this type of validation is to make sure you are QCing the reviewer results and ensuring that they actually comport with what the ultimate reviewer, that subject matter expert who's going to do the blind review for the sample, what that person believes is responsive. If you see mistakes, if you see things that are wrong, make sure you're telling your reviewers, you've got to change your approach to this because we view this as being responsive or not responsive, what have you, but make sure that the reviewers know so that there is less of a likelihood of inconsistent decisions when you actually do that blind review, because that can throw your numbers way off.
Here's a fun point. I remember reading an article by Maura Grossman. I can't remember which one now. It's years ago, where she talked about doing initial review of track documents. She and a number of others were real leaders in the NIST program's text retrieval conference experiments. And she reviewed documents that she originally reviewed them and had a reason to look at them 3 or 4 weeks later, and found she marked them differently, radically differently. And Tom, I know we had a client who was complaining about the reviewers when she reviewed some documents and how badly they were tagged. And then I think you found out that she had been the one who'd reviewed those documents. So you've got craziness and uncertainty because we are human, and these are words to be interpreted. But the point here is that if you have an independent person checking these taggings, you get at least a second opinion and greater confidence that the tags and the process is valid. But I think the point you've made, and it's one we've made, is this. If you're going to do a validation after the fact and have a separate reviewer do it blindly, you've got to make sure that that reviewer's view of the case matches those of the reviewers. And if that reviewer is a senior, which is often the case, in other words, perhaps more authoritative on what's relevant, then you don't wait in the end for that person to find out that the reviewers have been messing up. You got to do it right at the beginning.
That reminds me, John, and I couldn't agree with you more. As an example of that, we once had a client run a true predict review, basically ran out of responsive documents the way you're supposed to. Everything's good. And they said, okay, let's do a validation. And they were kind of stuck into doing this type of validation. And when they did the validation and did it blind, what the subject matter expert found was that the recall was about 45%. Why? Because when they had done QC, all they did was change the documents. They never talked to the reviewers, and they were making mistakes. They coded a lot of responsive documents as not responsive, and so we had to end up going back through the entire non-responsive pile to find out where those mistakes were made in order to up our recall. QC is really important if you're going to do this. That's all. That's the only issue there for me.
So, again, we're talking about validation methods here. And for a lot of folks, including people we talked to at Sedona, the stuff flummoxes them, or they fear it, or they're concerned. And this is on both sides. On the defense, I've heard people talk about how this is an extra burden, it's unfair, they shouldn't be criticized. But we both heard respectable plaintiffs' lawyers say, wait a minute, I don't trust that. I don't want just some number, a recall number. I've got to know more about this validation. How do we bridge this gap, Tom, and bring people together to see that this is a big step forward for discovery and not a backwards one?
Well, I think really the part of this that matters is to get people to really understand what this is all about. There are two things that we need to do. If you remember, we were actually at a conference last year where one of the judges observed that at some point we actually have to trust that lawyers are discharging their ethical obligations and those subject matter experts are actually making legitimate decisions and correct decisions and doing it ethically, right? So we have to start realizing that that's their obligation, and we have to start saying, okay, that's something that we need to do. As lawyers, we need to look at this, do that validation, make sure those numbers are accurate, and that we've done had a reasonable inquiry into the review. So that's, the key is, I think, training and understanding of how this works.
Here's what I'd say to both defense and plaintiff's lawyers. Validation is the price you pay for the huge savings that TAR brings you. On both ends, frankly, when you receive those documents, you use TAR just as effectively as when you're producing. But the bottom line here is that we start with a collection of hundreds of thousands, can be millions of documents, that in the old days, you might pay $1 a document, $2 a document. Your client's paying $1 million just to review. And through AI, the magic of machine learning, we've got a technique that allows you to cut that number down dramatically. It can vary by how rich the collection is, but sometimes by 95%. So suddenly your time and cost have dropped dramatically. And the only issue is, what's the cost? What's the price you pay for this mechanism? My answer to both sides is it's validation, a reasonable validation. And if that requires testing of 1,000, 2,000 documents, or three, if you compare that cost, time and money, to the cost of having to review that larger population, it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. And the only requirement here that we have, maybe as some function of that 26G stuff, is that we do it properly. And there are methods here to do it. And some of these judges are requiring that the same validation techniques apply not only to TAR, but to keyword search. What do you think of that, Tom?
You know, I don't have a problem with that at all. You know, Judge Peck once said, that we shouldn't subject TAR to anything more difficult than we would subject any other review technique. And I have, I've actually been on panels where we've talked about the fact that these folks with doing linear review, if you don't trust my lawyers and you're going to ask me to actually do a blind review of them, you ought to be doing the same thing if you're doing a linear review. So I'm okay with that, to be honest with you, John.
And ironically, the flip side is that when we were doing those linear reviews, nobody thought to validate. And so they weren't doing it. Maybe we got soft as a result. I know sure as heck when I was practicing, I'd get the request. I'd just send it over to the client and say, hey, send me these documents. And they'd just send them back and we'd stamp them and produce them. So we weren't validating at all, but I do think what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and that you can validate a keyword search set, including a null set, just as easily as you can validate a linear review, right?
All I want to do is remind you when we're talking, and the answer to that is yes, but I do want to remind you, when you were doing reviews, John, I'm pretty sure we weren't looking at a million documents, right? So we didn't have that same savings issue, et cetera. So different days.
3,000 docs seemed like a big case to me in those days. I liked it if I could fit everything in a red well, take it home over the weekend and look through it, watching the Broncos beat up on those Pittsburgh Steelers, or they always did, and then I'd feel good and go to court Monday morning. Hey, guys, I think that's our 25 minutes today on validation. Clearly, there's a lot more to be said. I encourage you to take a look at our articles on validation on the Catalyst blog, my ex articles, and TAR for Smart People. We'll try to keep hitting this issue, but Tom, close us out.
Well, all I want to say is, John, I couldn't agree with you more. The validation is the price of actually saving so dang much money as you're using these tools to get through the documents and make sure you're actually doing a good job and getting us back to 26G where you're saying, yep, I've looked, I know I've done a good enough job, we're done, here's the documents, let's move on, let's go to trial.
Well, that's a wrap for us today. I hope it's spring day. I hope it's as nice a spring day for all of you out there as we have on our virtual porch. We're going to rock a little more and have a few more sips of our favorite beverages. Mary Mac and the ACES folks, thank you as always for sponsoring us and giving us a home here on Tar Talk.
We're absolutely thrilled to have you, both John and Tom, and we're very grateful you're introducing new concepts to our ASEDS community, illusion, ratio method, the blind review. Very nice, gentlemen. We'll see you next time on the porch.